Thank you, sir. 6.5 minutes after 5 o'clock, everybody. I'm Al Ross, and this is Spectrum West. As he said, an expected high of 80 in the south tomorrow. We're having July and March. Lots of bets going on about what's going to happen between now and end of April. Cool program today. Thanks for being here. Comedian Bill Engvall is here tonight. He's at the State Theater in Eau Claire. You still have time to get tickets. 2 shows, 7 and 9:30. EauClaireArts.com is where you go. Poet Todd Boss is here. We'll look at his second big in stature, small in volume book of poetry. It's called Pitch. Jim Oliver talks with a funny guy who's part of a trio known as the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and we begin our standing room only program with Mr. John Patitucci. He plays the bass. Oh, does he play the bass? The big bass fiddle, the bass guitar. He'll be playing to beat the band, to use an old phrase, with all the young musicians involved in this year's Eau Claire Jazz Festival, which begins in less than a couple weeks. I reached him at his home near the Big Apple. He was born in the Core, Brooklyn, 53 years ago. That's Brooklyn, not Brooklyn. Where'd that come from? He's since played with some of the biggest names: B.B. King, Bonnie Raitt, Chick Corea, Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock, George Benson, Dizzy Gillespie, Queen Latifah, even Bon Jovi. And he currently teaches at City College of New York. Lately, he's been talking with Robert Baca, one of Eau Claire's resident jazz meisters. Or should we say, monsters.
Well, I've been speaking with him because we've been planning, we've been scheming about what we're going to do, and circumstance would have it. Also, I'm going to get to see an other old friend when I go there, in Andy Martin, because I spent a number of years in California, too. I did go to Long Beach State for a couple of years. Phenomenal trombone player. So I haven't seen him in years, so it's going to be fun to see him as well.
It used to be that bass players, especially acoustic stand-up bass players, were kind of the nondescript members of musical aggregations. Very few of them caught the spotlight as much, but you know, you're one of those guys that's stepping out from behind that big old bass. Tell us about the transition that began with playing the electric bass at age 10.
You know, growing up in Brooklyn, my older brother's a guitar player. So since he's 3 years older than me, I always wanted to do everything like him. We're still very close to this day, and he's a great musician. And because I always wanted to be like him, he was taking guitar lessons. So at first, I said, well, I want to do like he does, and I'll take guitar. Of course, I really loved banging on things. I was playing, I had little bongos and maracas, and I was singing prior to the electric bass, and then tried the guitar prior to 10, too. I'm left-handed, and I play righty, and I just didn't like the feeling of the pick in my right hand. It just felt really weird. His teacher at the time was somebody who was starting you right off the bat, reading music, doing the Mel Bay books and all this stuff, and I was, you know, probably 8 or 9, and I was really a high-energy kid sitting there with those, trying to read the books and count the lines and spaces of the notes and play Little Brown Jug. Well, needless to say, it didn't last long. So I just didn't have the patience for it. And my brother saw that the guitar was not going to be my instrument. He had the brilliant idea of putting an electric bass in my hand. There was one on the wall down the street of somebody's house. It was like an ornament. It was like a real cheap Sears Telstar bass.
Oh, hey.
Short scale, buzzed on every fret. It was a mess. And I loved it. I totally fell in love with it. You put the thing in my hands, I could use my fingers and not a pick on my right hand. Boy, I was in heaven. This felt good. Not long after that, we were exposed to some jazz records, and that was like a wonderful and strange, amazing music, magical thing that we couldn't understand, but it gripped us emotionally, and we got into it. And then by the time I was 15, I had grown to be tall enough to hold an acoustic bass. Before that, I couldn't manage. And in those days, we didn't have those cool little instruments that they have little kids start on that are like fractionalized instruments, you know. This trend in bass players becoming also proficient as soloists and composers and everything, this goes all the way back to Jimmy Blanton. Some people would argue even maybe the seeds of it were planted when Walter Page started walking on the bass with Count Basie. So the bass came out of the shadows a long time ago in a way. You know, in the music, it was never really in the shadows because it's absolutely fundamental and essential. You can't have a great jazz group without a great bass player. So having said that, it definitely evolved. The technical part of the instrument in jazz evolved quite a bit, as it has in classical music, too. I've been playing classical music for most of my life as well. There was a big tradition in classical music that started maybe with Italian bass virtuosos. It may be the 1700s and 1800s. Those guys were tearing up the bass and freaking people out. You know, they thought that these guys were sort of the Paganini of the bass. So some guys were flying around on the instrument, but in jazz, it didn't happen here until, you know, Blanton. And then Ray Brown, obviously, who kind of blew the door wide open, too.
You have on your website, you post an occasional journal.
Yes.
Very occasional, as a matter
of
fact.
Yeah, I know.
That's okay, though. I mean, I'm with you there. I've been asked to blog a few times, and boy, I bring out the true feeling of the word blog.
I'm trying to be better at it, but truth of it is, I need to practice and compose and run around and do gigs, and, you know, so I don't really have as much time to sit there and type.
Yeah, well, I was reading. Parts of the most recent one, which was posted in February, sound kind of like New Year's resolutions to me. Things that you've wanted to do more of, but maybe you couldn't find the time, like playing more on the road, collaborating with favorite people, and a tantalizing little sentence predicting a new way to study bass with John Patitucci. Via long distance. And I'll tell you what, it's been about a month since you teased us with that one. Is there anything new to report?
Well, you know, it's actually already in the can, waiting to be released. Actually, it's very cool. These people in Napa, David and Patricia Butler, who David was part of the founding people of AOL, and he got out a long time ago, and obviously he did quite well.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of those people who was a real deep, caring individual about philanthropy and education and all sorts of stuff. And he was an amateur jazz guitar player. So he wanted to come up with a website where these academies on these different instruments would be born. There are already some people up there. If you like jazz guitar, Martin Taylor has an academy. The name of the thing is called Artist Works. Now, the beautiful thing about Artist Works is it, I went out there and basically gave birth. I filmed and recorded a curriculum that starts with, this is an acoustic bass, this is an open E string, this is how you stand, this is how you hold it. Takes you from beginning through intermediate and advanced. There's also footage of me with a trio, but the neat thing about it is, for like a yearly fee, which isn't that much, I don't know, maybe around $250, which isn't much money, because when people come to study with me privately at my house, it costs $150 an hour.
Okay.
But you can stream 24/7 all the content. All the content. And in addition to that, which is really cool, is the student then can videotape themselves and say, look, John, I have a personal question. Say, look, I'm struggling with bar 30 of this exercise or this concept that you shared. I can't do it. Here, I'll play it for you. Could you send me? And then these are called video exchanges.
Cool.
Then I film a short response back. The question and the answer go up on the site, and anybody who subscribes yearly can see any of those questions and answers. So you build a knowledge database.
Wow.
And you create a little academy of people who are studying the bass with your style of teaching or whatever.
Oh, to have had that when you were a young guy.
Yeah, that let's just say nothing like that existed.
Man, I got to tell you, the resources that are available to young people and, as you said, even older people who want to take up music it's just amazing stuff. Even with all of the technology and all of the quick stuff that's available out there, it's still practice, practice, practice.
Absolutely. There's the gift that God gives everybody, and then with that gift comes an imperative, a responsibility to develop it, and there are no shortcuts for that. Everybody has holes that they got to fill and things that they got to work on, and sweat equity is still the name of the game.
You've done a lot in music. Anything in your profession that you haven't done that you'd love to do?
Well, I didn't get to play with Miles Davis. That would have been nice, but that's not going to happen now because he's gone. But I really don't know what's in store with the future. I'm really thankful for what's occurred because it does seem like a little bit of a Cinderella story. For me, you know, this kid from Brooklyn who came from a family that was not comprised of professional musicians and didn't come from means could wind up playing with his heroes and traveling all around the world playing music that he loves. And, I mean, I had dreams growing up. I had no idea.
I had a neat conversation before the jazz festival last year with Bobby Sanabria.
Oh, yeah.
And his take on growing up in New York was so cool that you could hover over the city of New York and you would hear all of this different kinds of music coming out of all these different neighborhoods.
This is the only thing that wasn't a surprise in a way. that I was exposed to jazz so early is that I grew up in Brooklyn, and unbeknownst to me in those days, later on I found out because I met some of these guys, you know, people like Freddie Hubbard were probably not that far away. And so the music was in the air. The people were there. Not far from me were people like Max Roach and Joe Henderson. You know, they didn't live that far. So it's incredible that the music was in the air and it was everywhere. And the cultural mix, which New York is known for, was potent, you know? Couldn't help but running into something.
And they're saying the same thing about you now.
Well,
they're saying, wow, I was this close to John Patitucci, and I didn't know it.
I always joke with people. I say, he's a bum, you know, especially if I'm sitting somewhere and somebody starts talking about me, but they don't know I'm there. He's a bum, you know. They look at you like, who is this guy?
That's good. You got the accent and everything there,
yeah,
man,
wow,
which
yeah.
I hadn't heard prior to this. So it's good. You can put it on and turn it off. Good for you. What's the difference between music on the West Coast and East Coast?
I would say in the scene, that's where the difference happens. Not as much support for jazz and creative music in Los Angeles as there is in New York. Just flat, plain and simple. And another difference is that there are still more great musicians that come from all around the world to play jazz in New York. Jazz mecca of the world. L.A. could never make that claim.
Coming up soon, Eau Claire, Wisconsin is going to be the hub of jazz, at least
for
a weekend.
52nd Street, I hear, yeah.
No kidding, yeah. Well, safe travels, John, and we're looking forward to having you in Wisconsin.
Yeah, this sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Bassist John Patitucci, one of the headliners in this year's Eau Claire Jazz Festival, which gets cranked up on March 29th. In coming weeks, we'll have lots of information on what is becoming one of America's premier music events. For now, you can get all the information you need to plan your participation at EauClaireJazz.com. 18 and a half minutes after 5, this is Spectrum West.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering online and phone loan applications for student loans, consolidation, vehicles, a line of credit, and more. Information online at wisconsincu.org.
I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us today. Leave it to Jim Oliver to find something unconventional and then hunt down the people responsible. I swear, in addition to his successful newspaper career, he could have been a private eye. Let's see what and who Jim's uncovered this week.
The Complete World of Sports Abridged, a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company of Sonoma, California, is coming Monday to the State Theater in Eau Claire. Joining us by telephone from his home in Chicago to talk about the show is Austin Titchener, writer, performer, and managing partner of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, thank you, Jim. Happy to do it.
Well, according to your biography, you played recurring roles on the television shows 24, Alias, Felicity, Ally McBeal, and The Practice. You were associate producing director of the American Stage Festival in Milford, New Hampshire, writing over 20 plays and musicals for young audiences, and you directed summer stock shows. Well, tell us about the company. How many people are involved? Who does the writing and all that kind of stuff?
The RSC is a three-man performing group. It started 30 years ago, in fact, in 1981, as a pass-the-hat act at Renaissance fairs in Northern and Southern California. And they started by doing 15-minute three-man versions of Hamlet. And then a couple of years later, they did a two-man version of Romeo and Juliet. And around about 1986, 1987, somebody said, you know, you should do the complete works of William Shakespeare. You know, you've done two of his plays. There's only 35 more. How tough could it be? So they put together the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, took it to the Edinburgh Fringe Theater Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland in 1987, thinking that would be the swan song of the company. And they started getting bookings from all over the world and started touring. And that's when two of the founding members, Daniel Singer and Jess Winfield, decided, hang on, they didn't sign up to be touring actors as part of their grown-up lives. They didn't want to do that anymore. So Reed and I joined the company thinking, you know, the RSC could be its own theater company. It doesn't just have to be one show or two shows. You know, Shakespeare doesn't have to be the most important name in our company name. Reduced is. And so Reed and I, in the last 20 years, have kind of taken that ball of reduction and run with it, to use a sports metaphor, and we've just reduced every large important topic that we can think of. Our second show was The Complete History of America abridged. Then we reduced the Bible, the complete Word of God abridged. Old Testament, first act, New Testament, second act. When we go to Israel, it's just a one act. we reduced the millennium into a musical. It was 1,000 years of world history in 100 minutes. And just to make it more difficult, we sang and danced. that was so successful, we've never done another musical since. Our next show was All the Great Books Abridged, every book you should have read in high school but probably didn't. We followed that up with Completely Hollywood Abridged, the best Hollywood movies ever made, all crammed into one. And then we followed that up with our current show, The Complete World of Sports Abridged, which is what we're bringing to Eau Claire on Monday.
He is Austin Titchener, writer, performer, and managing partner of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, producer of The Complete World of Sports Abridged. How was The Complete World of Sports Abridged developed? How do you get started with one of these projects?
Well, the trickiest part for all of our finding a new show for us is for Reed and I to figure out what's a topic that is large and important that people take really seriously and are very passionate about and that we enjoy and want to spend several years of our life working on. And we figured, well, we had already done the Bible, but we wanted something that people take even more seriously, and that's sports.
Oh, right on.
So it's a topic that we love. You know, he's a huge fan of baseball, which puts me to sleep. I'm a huge fan of basketball, which bores him silly. And he likes the pros. I prefer the colleges. So everybody has strong feelings about a sports team or a sport generally. The trickiest thing is finding out the concept for how to talk about it. We always like to reduce a topic through the medium that most people are familiar with the topic. So that's both the Shakespeare show and all the great books are sort of. Shakespeare is set in a theater. All the Great Books is set in a high school because these are the places where you first become aware of Shakespeare and all the Great Books. Sports, most people watch sports on television. So the three of us, the three performers of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, are also, not only are we the athletes competing in the complete world of sports, but we are also the sportscasters commenting on the action. We are the three sportscasters from RSCSN, the Reduced Shakespeare Company Sports Network. And so what's been really enormously gratifying is that, you know, it was a show that a topic that we love. And people come to see the show, and sports fans love the show because we are celebrating and making fun of the thing that they love. And what's even better is that non-sports fans come to see the show and like it even more than the sports fans because we're making fun of the thing that they don't care for. People will bring their families. Several women have come and said, oh, I thought this was going to be dirty. We went, well, why did you think that? She said, I don't know, just comedy's dirty. Well, we're not that dirty. We strive to be PG-13, pretty good if you're 13. We strive not to say anything you can't say on network television, which admittedly is not a very high bar.
Not anymore.
But that's the gratifying thing is that, you know, we get kids coming to see the show, we get grandparents coming to see the show, and they're all enjoying it. And it's still a little bit edgy, and there's some things that'll fly over kids' heads. But mostly it's just fun, funny, physical family comedy.
You mentioned football, baseball, and basketball. Any other sports involved?
Oh, yeah, everything. I think we actually tabulated it up. We cover 3,147.3 sports. That .3 is rock, paper, scissors. what we do, and so we cover every sport ever played on every continent since the beginning of time. We cover sports from seven continents and divide them into nine categories. Sports that you play with a stick. Who can beat up who sports. Sports that use animals. Occupational sports, which are some of my favorite. The rodeo, lumberjacking, and the world's fastest brain surgery competition. But then we also go from Antarctica to Africa to North America, South America. We cover all the European sports. The European sports, they have some really strange ones, like Quidditch. which is one of two sports covered in the Olympics that actually uses a broom, the other, of course, being curling. We do curling and then extreme curling. And then we also we end the show with our international global sporting event, we can't call it the Olympic Games because the International Olympic Committee is quite litigious. So we call our event the 16-minute quadrennial global medal chase and Olympish Games.
So how long of a show do you cram all of this stuff into?
It's about an hour and 40-minute show. So what if that's 100 minutes? And then we take a 15-20-minute intermission. Everybody's out of there in 2 hours. It's great. You're in, you're out, kind of like the Rambozo theory of comedy. Get in, get the laugh, get out.
Well, we've been visiting with Austin Tichenor, writer, performer, and managing partner of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. He's part of the cast of The Complete World of Sports, Abridged, which is coming Monday to the State Theater in Eau Claire. For ticket information, call Eau Claire Regional Arts at 715-832-2787 or visit the website at eauclairearts.com. Austin Tichenor, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Jim. It was fun.
A little playing of the green here as we head towards news time. It's 28 minutes after 5. Thanks, Jim Oliver. As usual, great job. Reminders, tomorrow evening it's the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra's Salute to Beethoven concert at Grace Lutheran Church, West Grand Avenue. WPR's Norman Gilliland is the MC. Tickets available at the door. Remember, too, that Gatsby's Supper Club plays at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls tonight, tomorrow night, Sunday afternoon. Tickets at cvca.net. Tonight at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond, it's the Bluegrass of Long Time Gone. Speaking of bluegrass, next Friday through Sunday, the River Falls Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Bureau presents the second Bluegrass and Roots Festival in downtown River Falls. 3 days of bluegrass, roots, Cajun, and Americana. Complete schedule at www.riverfallsbluegrass.com. Apropos, while this music plays at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory, it's Something for the Wearin' of the Green tomorrow evening at 7:30. And the popular exhibit Hubcaps is up through the month of April. Information on all things Northern Lake Center at 715-268-6811. After a news break, our conversation with comedian Bill Engvall, who, as we speak, is getting closer to taking the stage of the State Theater in Eau Claire for the first of two shows. First one 7, next one at 9:30 this evening. And Todd Boss will give us the poet's perspective on his new book. It's called Pitch. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for joining us on Spectrum West. A news break is next. We'll be back.
Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond at Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Miracle Worker, a play based on the life of Helen Keller, opens next Friday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The show continues through April 15th. The Neillsville area players will present a dinner theater production of A Little Murder Never Hurt Anyone next Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday at Fanny Supper Club in Neillsville. Righteous, the story of the Righteous Brothers, plays tonight and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The musical runs through May 12th. The Complete World of Sports, Abridged, will be performed Monday night at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Gatsby Supper Club will be presented tonight, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday by the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. Caddy Woodlawn the Musical will be presented by the Barron Spotlighters tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Barron Community Center. Tuna Does Vegas plays tonight and Saturday at the Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The production will run through April 1st. The Falls Players will hold auditions for The Surprising Story of the Three Little Pigs from 6 until 8 p.m. Tuesday and Wednesday at the Lunda Theater in Black River Falls. Performances are scheduled for June 16th through the 18th. And that's some of what's happening in theaters around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to Spectrum West, everyone. I'm Al Ross. Good show today. If you go to his biography, you'll find that Bill Engvall has been around a whole bunch of blocks. City blocks, country 40s. And since choosing comedy, or maybe comedy chose him, he's been a busy guy. Tours, albums, game shows, sitcoms, dramatic roles, and more. Tonight, he's at the State Theater in Eau Claire twice. If you're going, this will serve as a preview. If you're not, it might change your mind. Bill Engvall was good enough to get up early on the California coast, making me wonder whether or not he's an early riser every day. Maybe springing out of bed at 5 a.m.?
Al?
Yeah.
No.
No, yeah. Okay.
Well, although I will tell you something, but for my birthday this year, my wife gave me a gym membership, which is one of those gifts that you go, oh, you know, it's like giving a guy a certificate for hair plugs.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I guess you think I'm fat.
You're doing this because you want me to be around longer.
That was her excuse. How do you argue with that? You
know, I know. Well, Bill, I've been asked to represent a whole bunch of white-collar workers who are walking around with a scowl on their face wanting to laugh, but they have no one to humor them. anything you can do, Bill?
That's a tough call there, Al.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm so looking forward to coming to Eau Claire. You know, it's funny. I've actually played Eau Claire way back in my career. When they, I don't even know if they still have, there used to be a country festival there every summer.
You bet.
I'll tell you a story there. I was there one year, and Here's Your Sign, it just hit, you know, big. And so, you know, you go to those things, and it's like eight acts a day. And I was on like at 2 in the afternoon. Now, this shows you how far back it goes. Little Leanne Rimes had just come out with Blue. So she was probably, I don't know, 12, 11, 13, something like that. I was on stage doing my show, and she was coming up behind me. So I finished my set, and as I'm finishing the set, this kid walks up with a big cardboard thing that says, "Here's your sign," and he set it on the stage with a marker and wanted me to sign it, like you're supposed to do.
Sure.
And then he went back to his seat. So I reach down, and I'm signing it, and I look up, and there is a throng of people coming towards the stage now. So I finish my set, and I go to the left-hand side of the stage, and I just start signing autographs all the way across while Leanne's band is setting up. I must have signed 75 autographs, and I stood up and I said, "Hey, thank you all very much," to start with. And a guy with like a 2-year-old on his neck stands up and goes, "Hey, don't be a jerk. Sign this for my kid."
So, yeah, maybe you weren't big back then. Well, now you are, though, and that's cool that you're coming back.
I'm amazed that people still pay money to hear what I have to talk about. But this business has been so amazing and so good to me. You know, it's one of these businesses that, as you well know, it's easy to get caught up in what you're not doing. And then I talk to someone like you, and I'm sitting in my office, I'm looking around, and I've achieved everything I set out to do. I got to do TV, a sitcom. You know, I had a gold and platinum comedy record. I've written books, been in movies, and now I've just sold a drama to TNT because I'd like to try my hand at dramatic acting.
Ooh.
You know, if the good Lord came to me today and said, "Bill, you've had a good run. Your career's over." I could walk away and say, I've had a great time. I mean, I've really got to do everything I wanted to do. And there's nothing better than, like, when you're on stage there at the State Theater and you're on a roll with that audience. I wish everybody could have that feeling that, you know, everybody's laughing and you're having a great time. And I think probably the reason for my success is not because I'm the funniest guy out there, but I think it's because I do a clean show and I keep my material really related, you know, just everyday life stuff.
Yeah.
And I try to tell that to new comedians that, you know, you don't need to swear. And I'm not soapboxing here. Listen, I love a good dirty joke as much as the next guy. But I'm not going to take my wife to watch an hour and a half of it. And I don't want people to have to explain stuff to their kids on the way home. You know, it's because that's the one thing I've noticed is that, you know, I've had fans now that say, "Oh, man, I've been watching you since I was 9. And I'm like, A, I feel really old. But B, you know, I got a fan for life there now.
You bet. I was reading your bio, and I was going back to that time when you were a DJ at a club, and you decided to get up on stage. I should ask Bill if he has been PG-13 from the beginning.
I guess that's been, you know, dude, I've been doing this 30 years. I think probably in the beginning, if I was to be honest, I probably was what I would call a club act.
Okay.
You know, there was a little swearing that probably didn't need to be there. But you know what? It was funny. For whatever reason in my career, the guys that shaped my career were Bob Newhart, Bill Cosby, guys like that. And I started looking at them, and I go, what's the common denominator there? And it was that they work clean, and they're still working. I got to meet Bob Newhart. I sat on a panel of a TV panel with him. And I got to tell you, even at 50, when I met him, I was still like a little kid. Because I can remember sitting with my dad and listening to the Button Down Mind albums of Bob Newhart and watching him on The Tonight Show. And
his phone call routines.
Oh, the one-sided phone calls. That was genius.
No kidding.
So I think one of my favorite ones was Abraham Lincoln's press secretary.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Abe, we have to keep the stovepipe hat. Yeah.
I remember that.
And I hope that someday when my career is done, I hope that people will look back on my career and say, you know, he was funny and he was clean. You know, listen, you look at somebody like Richard Pryor. He wasn't cussing just to be cussing. That was part of his lifestyle. But I just feel like I think an audience appreciates a joke better when it's clean. They know it takes time to write a clean, funny joke. I was doing a show in Bismarck, North Dakota this January, 15 below zero. I'd flown all day because no one flies direct into Bismarck. I get to the Hyatt. I walk up to the check-in counter, and the little girl at the check-in girl goes, "Well, hello, Mr. Engvall. Welcome to Bismarck. Is this business or pleasure?" And I thought, what? Well, yeah, it's pleasure. What time's the pool bar open, honey?
And thank you for the joke. I can use that.
Yeah, that's right.
Our guest is Bill Engvall, comedian, appearing tonight at the State Theater in Eau Claire. You were going to be a teacher, I read.
Yep.
What did you want to teach, elementary?
I was going to teach elementary kids.
Okay.
Just because I wanted to get them before they became too smart alecky. You know, I think teachers in their own rights are entertainers. I mean, and my proof is, if you think back in your education years, if you had a teacher that really made learning fun, you can remember their names. And I can remember, like, back to my kindergarten teacher, there's like a handful of them, I can remember their names.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I'm not really into disciplining the kids, so they would have loved me.
You mentioned earlier, you said, I've done most of what I set out to do. Did you have goals at the beginning of things that you wanted to accomplish as an entertainer?
You know, I think I did. But, you know, I got to tell you, Al, it was one of these things. I just thought it was a cool hobby. I never thought it would be what I would end up doing for the rest of my life. I think until, you know, when Here's Your Sign came out and went platinum, I think at that point I went, ooh, I better start taking this a little more seriously. Thank God it worked out because I'm not trained to do anything else. You know, unlike Jeff, who, you know, he's always been very business-minded and, you know, we started out in IBM and all that, I was a DJ in a nightclub.
Yeah.
And so, you know, comedy was just, I'm like, oh, I'll try my hand at it. And I fell in love with it, but I never thought it'd be what I'd be doing. I mean, I always wanted to be an actor, but I always thought if you wanted to be an actor, you call yourself an actor, you're an actor. You know, I didn't realize you went to study and classes and all that. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. When my wife and I first moved to L.A., she was 8 months pregnant with our first child. We were renting a house we could not afford, and I got my first audition. And so I told my wife, hey, read this with me a couple times before I go. So we read a couple times, and I found this out years later that after I left the house, she sat there on the couch and just started crying. And I said, why were you crying? And she goes, because I was pregnant with our first child. We couldn't afford this house, and you couldn't act your way out of a paper bag.
Wow.
So in her own sweet way, she got me to go to acting classes and stuff. And I love acting. I really enjoy being able to climb in somebody else's skin and bring that character to life. But there's nothing that compares to stand-up.
Speaking of acting, I've got an idea for a Western. You can be the lead in a thing called Billy Lingo.
Billy Lingo.
What do you think?
You know what's funny? You bring that up because when they called me about hosting the Lingo game show,
mm-hmm.
They said, hey, we want you to host this game show. And my first thought was, oh, God, is my career over already?
Yeah.
But I actually found out recently that the game show network, Pat, they're not going to pick it up. So. But it's funny, you know, when you lose one thing, you pick up another thing. I just sold a drama to TNT that's loosely based, and you'll remember this series, it's loosely based on the old McLeod series.
Yep.
So I'm going to play like a Texas Ranger that gets transferred to Chicago or L.A. Or New York, and he's kind of a fish out of water thing. And the guy that's writing this guy, John Tinker, wrote Lost and Breakout Kings and Hawthorne. So I got a really good writer on it, and so I'm really excited about that to try, because I did... Last year, I did an episode of Leverage and I did a three-episode arc on Hawthorne where I got to play a dramatic role, and just was like this whole new world was opened up to me.
Can't wait to see that. Man, that's intriguing.
Yeah, I hope it, you know, I think it's going to be great. We'll see. You know, of course, you know the process of getting some on the air. So anything that gets on the air is almost an accident. So,
well, I got one thing that's really going well for you here coming to Western Wisconsin. There are a lot of Norwegians here.
Ah.
Engvall is Norwegian, yes?
Yep. It was funny. Back in my family tree, our name used to be Swenson. But apparently somebody thought that was just too easy, so let's get a name no one can remember.
Wow.
A lady sent me a Swedish phone book page that had Engvall, and Engvall in Sweden is like Smith. But you'll see like Engvall Cleaners, Engvall Donuts. So I got to get back there someday. Maybe I'll be somebody.
Well, Bill, you really cut out for comedy, because one thing I like about you, and I did a lot of research, and in doing that research, I ran across lots of photographs of you. And the way you pose, the way you smile, always appears as if you're hiding something. You know,
it's funny you bring that, because someone has I've had several people say that, and I don't mean to do it, but I guess it's just, I guess ever since I was a kid, there was that little bit of a dark side to me, that kind of like the kid, like when you catch your kid doing something wrong and they kind of grin at you like, you totally knew you were doing that.
Well, I had other questions for you, but I'm going to let you go, and safe travels. Have a wonderful time in the Midwest. Keep up the good work. We'll be looking for all the stuff you're doing.
Well, Al, I appreciate the time, and God bless you, and tell everybody, come on out and have a good time. We'll laugh it up.
Bill Engvall, among other irons in his fire, has a show coming up on the History Channel called Back in My Day. Have fun tonight at the State Theater in Eau Claire if you have tickets. If you don't, I know where to get them. EauClaireArts.com or on the phone at 715-832-ARTS, A-R-T-S, or stop by and grab a ticket at the door. First show, 7 o'clock. The nightcap is at 7:30. That was fun.
Support for WPR comes from the Eau Claire Children's Theater, presenting the stage version of the MGM movie Seven Brides for Seven Brothers at the State Theater from March 29 through April 1st. Details are available online at ecct.org.
This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us. It's 11 minutes before 6 p.m., 5:49. Yes, that's what it is. Well, after my first exposure to Todd Boss, the poet, through the book of verse known as Yellow Rocket, I became a fan, so I was duly excited when his next book, Pitch, arrived a while ago. I was equally thrilled knowing that meant another conversation was upcoming. The cover of the book grabs you right away. It sports a photograph of a grand piano lying on its side. And then the poet begins playing you like a Steinway.
Yeah, that moment when my dad lost the family piano off the back of the pickup truck, I was 12 years old, and that's been replaying in my head, you know, all my life. So I knew that someday I would tackle it with a poem. And once I finally had it occurred to me what a great word it is, pitch, to describe how things go over, you know, and how well that word lends itself to notions of musicality and the soundboard of an old piano. So.
Mm-hmm. And it's baseball, too.
Well, it's baseball, too. It's baseball, too, and that's kind of a... That's the non sequitur of the title, unfortunately. I wish I had a baseball poem in there. I tried to work on one, but it never came in.
Wow, you should have asked me. I was a pitcher.
Oh, were you really?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
No small feat to be a good pitcher.
No, I have big feet. Which helps when you're a pitcher. You got to have that.
Yeah, you have to plant.
I've read the book, as you would hope I would during an interview. I'm looking forward to diving in again, because books of poetry are like leftover casserole. I think they're better the second time. But I'm thinking to myself, how in God's name, with all the thousands of words within a book like this, do you settle on one as the title of this volume of poems? I actually have coined some musical terms that would go well with it, like pianissigo.
Uh-huh.
Or how about pian-oh-no? But pitch just stood out for you. So you started with pitch. You just didn't go through the book and say, here's a word, pitch. I'll call the book pitch.
Well, it was for a while I had titled the collection Overtures on an Overturned Piano, which is that, you know, title sequence.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seemed sort of ungainly, and I liked the simplicity of a short word. And, you know, Yellow Rocket was the first title of my first book. Pitch, it has an association with pine pitch.
Sure.
And so there's a natural element there that I'm drawing on a little bit, too. I liked the sense of pitch as a color, pitch black, going from yellow to black. I like that idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, as you know, I thoroughly enjoyed Yellow Rocket. You and I talked about it, and this book feels different to me.
Yeah, yeah, it is different.
So tell me what kind of space there is between that book and this one.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm still trying to figure that out myself. It's the book is still very new to me, too, having just come out. But I feel like there is a lot of different spaces in this book. It's shorter, for one thing. And for another, there's that section toward the end about the 35W bridge collapse here in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. which is sort of a sequence of very narrow poems that sort of tell a completely different kind of story than what Yellow Rocket was interested in. And then, you know, my dog plays a big role in this book. There are a lot of poems about my dog. Yeah, it's a different kind of... Where Yellow Rocket was interested in turbulence, I think this book is more interested in the sort of inner music of our lives and the darkness in that inner music and trying to find a balance between those things. So it's a different kind, it's just a totally different kind of project, I think. Even though, you know, there are so many similarities. I mean, there's farm poems in the beginning. There's poems about my marriage and relationship. There are poems about my children. There are a lot of echoes to Yellow Rocket. But you're right, I think the themes are really different.
Well, and you probably are overjoyed that it does feel different to me, because that's what you strive.
I don't want to be sounding the same note again. You know, that wouldn't be any fun.
And I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah.
It's just a different trip.
Yeah, really
that's
different
cool.
trip.
That's cool. Yeah. Our guest is Todd Boss, of course, poet. He's been here before. His new book is called Pitch from W.W. Norton & Company. Todd, of course, hails originally from Western Wisconsin. Tell me, Mr. Boss, how does a poet grow? Secondarily, is it important for that to happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I think any artist has to sort of move on from whatever they've created. This goes back to some of my poems about God. I think of God as a creator. What's amazing to me about creation, if I may be so bold as to talk this way on the radio, is that it's kind of an amazing work of art that ultimately is so complex that it has the power potentially to teach God himself something about himself, which I find very compelling. And so when I explore God in my poems, I explore him from that perspective. I think of him as an artist that wants a work of art so complicated, so complex that it will surprise him constantly. And so, I think any artist is looking for that same thrill. You know, you create something. If the next day going back to your creation doesn't teach you something new, it probably isn't worth keeping around.
Yeah.
And that's how you figure out in the first place what belongs in the book, you know, to begin with.
Don't you just hate it when you feel like you're having an epiphany and things are just flowing and you feel like you're submersed in just depth and you write something and then you read it the next morning and you go, oh, jeez, what the hell is that?
Yeah, well, why did I write something so totally obvious? Yeah, that's why drunken conversations at the bar are so hilarious, because you can find yourself writing something deep and profound on a napkin that in the morning is just totally nonsense. But I think that has to do with just different states of mind. You're right. We're not the same person, you know, in the morning that we are when we go to bed at night, and we go through different states of mind. Poetry, for me, helps me explore those, and then I can figure out later what thought is worth keeping around and what isn't.
Well, growing up as you did near the thriving metropolis of Fall Creek, as you write, do you think you're getting closer to who you were, or are you getting further away from it?
That's an interesting question. There's kind of vertigo in that question, isn't
mm-hmm.
there?
You know,
you can't help leave where you've been, but at the same time, you're looking at it closer and closer and closer, trying to bring it into focus.
Because you do write about the memories that you have.
Yeah. I think most of that is trying to source out what material in my background has contributed to making me who I am today. So it's not just that there's this endless supply of nostalgic stuff I can draw from my day-to-day diary of when I was 12. It's more, you know, I am this person writing this poem about my city life today because of the kid or the thing that happened to me when I was that kid, you know, back in 1982, mm-hmm. you know, on the farm. So it's more kind of spelunking for gems.
Ah. There's a certain amount of creativity in the book, too, other than your ability to write and, you know, add flowers to words, and that is how you space the words. The one that really comes to mind is the poem about marbles.
Yeah, Marble Tumbles.
Yeah.
That's a poem that just by spacing the words out on the page makes the reader aware that there's a marble falling through the mm-hmm. poem itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to think about the poem as a sort of sculpture. You know, it exists in a white space and it has a shape, and our eyes physically feel it. You know, when we read, our eyes are sort of physically moving around in our heads, and those things send signals to us. So I'm kind of conscious about playing with those things with the reader.
What's next for Todd Boss?
Well, I've written the sequence of 35W bridge poems. You know, you remember when the collapse happened.
I sure do, yep.
And so I've written 35 word poems to commemorate the collapse of the 35W bridge. And the Star Tribune, I think, is going to run them in August with a project for readers to log in to a website with their own 35 word poem.
Talented guy there, Todd Boss. The poem titles are part of the first lines of his poems, so you're already into it and you don't decide whether or not to proceed just from the title. The book is called Pitch. I was going to read something from it, but it's better if you pick it up and read them for yourself and read them over again. It's a lot of fun. That wraps it up, folks. That's another edition of Spectrum West for the 16th of March. Feels like the 16th of July. Next week, a successful sommelier educated at Stout. More on the Eau Claire Jazz Festival and more on even more. Spectrum West, 5 p.m. next Friday right here. Don't miss it. Have a nice weekend. Drive and ride carefully. And happy St. Patrick's Day.